Hello, what have we here?
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 53. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about Star Wars Rebels and season 3. As always, I'm Mikey B, joined by my co-host Danya.
Hey everyone!
We also have Mikal with us this week. How you doing, Mikal?
Good, how are you guys?
I'm doing great. If you want to get involved in the conversation, I don't know, but if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at Our Radio Podcast, leave a comment on our Facebook, send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio with over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free. We also have launched our Patreon. Check out resistanceradio.net/Patreon. There are some really cool perks, including Discord chat. You can join us in our recording studio as we record live. Join us for our movie nights, which we'll be scheduling that first one coming soon. And After Dark episodes. Danya, what do you think about Patreon?
I'm having a lot of fun with it. The Discord chat is great.
It's kind of ridiculous right now, right?
It is. It kind of goes a little bit all over the place. We've talked about everything from musicals. What else have we discussed? Like, it's a little bit of everything. I think we...
Merchandise, t-shirts. I saw t-shirts in the chat there earlier.
Yeah. What else? Yeah, I was, like, screaming about Sing Street the other day because I'd only just watched it for the first time. Some people have talked about video games because the new Mass Effect came out. I sometimes scream about hockey and Supergirl and other stuff. So we all just kind of have a lot of silly fun. Mikey talks about his misadventures in DIY.
Yeah, I've been doing lots of construction lately. I'm actually covered in drywall right now. But hey, that's all good.
Aren't we all?
I know, right? Just covered in drywall, redoing a room and all that. But if you decide not to do Patreon, you can get a brand new t-shirt, like I should probably put on right now. We have t-shirts and buttons for sales on our website at resistanceradio.net. And it's time for the news. So first bit of news, I'm actually pretty excited for this because we're finally getting our first look at Star Wars Battlefront 2. Which is, you know, I'm excited for. I'm like, oh, that'll be cool. You know, we'll talk a little bit about Battlefront 2. The first look of it is going to be at none other than Celebration at 2:30 p.m. at the galaxy-wide premiere of Star Wars Battlefront 2 panel. They'll release the first trailer. They also are going to have if you're in L.A. in Hollywood, you'll have a chance to play it come June 10th at EA Play Hollywood. But the game is scheduled for release winter 2017. So there are some really cool new things that people have been asking for, like a story mode. So I'm excited to put it on easy and go through the story mode, which I'm pretty excited for. You know, to do a story mode, I really don't know what they're going to tackle. Is there going to be prequel content? Is there going to be Force Awakens content or Last Jedi content? You know, we just don't know. Even if it was like a rehash of some of the battles that we saw in the first Battlefront, I'd be okay with a story mode. Specifically, like the Death Star type story mode would be kind of fun to play through. You can also play against just bots on everything at various varying difficulty, so you won't have to always play online, which would be great for those people on PC. Battlefront 2, I will probably get it for PS4 though. I'm kind of done with the computer. There wasn't enough players on there.
Will probably get it for my Mac as long as they do a Mac version.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be just Xbox, Xbox, PlayStation 4, and Microsoft Windows, but you can put Boot Camp on your Mac.
What?
Yep, no Mac
version.
Well,
that's kind of stupid.
Well, that's how they did the first one.
I usually played it on my friend Scott's computer. He was on the Rogue One episode that we did. Yep. I usually play it whenever I'm staying with him, but not really any other time. And I don't have a console at the moment. Not a new generation console, so I don't own an Xbox and I don't own a PlayStation. I do own a Dreamcast and a Nintendo 64, though.
There you go.
I don't know if that makes up for it, but I definitely can.
As long as you have a Star Wars Racer playing that pod racing, then you're good.
Yeah, I definitely can't play Battlefront or Battlefront 2 on either of those, though. But I could probably boot camp my Mac to play Battlefront 2. Mostly because I wanted a story mode. That's what I wanted the whole time. It just... I don't always get enough out of a game when it's just pure multiplayer the way that it is. Like, I need some kind of story mode or something to, like... occupy me. Like, I love stuff like that, but I don't know. I'm really looking forward to Battlefront 2, though, if it's got story mode and that you can have a go on offline mode, because I hate having to immediately be proficient in a game if other people are relying on me to be good at it. I hate that. It makes me so anxious because I'm like, I don't want to let people down, you know?
I hate that too, but like in real life.
Yeah. I mean, why can't we have practice mode for everything?
I agree.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I'm excited for it. You know, we have, I kind of want to hear what the JotoCast guys say about it, because I know a few of them were kind of in the same boat as me with the first Battlefront. It's fun, but there are other games that were a little bit more exciting that came out around the same time that had the same concept, just not Star Wars. Although, I will say Battlefront was beautiful, you know, and it was Star Wars.
Oh yeah, there's no denying that it is a very, very, very pretty game, and I've said that much about it before. It just... okay, for me, it was more style over substance. But
yeah.
It may not be that way for everyone, and I'm not knocking if, like, it was your favorite game of last year or whatever... but for me, it was just, yeah, it was fine. You know, it's fun. It's a little bit of immersion of the way games are, but it just wasn't anything spectacular for me. But,
Yep. More news. We finally get some more information about The Last Jedi. Well, not more information, but more footage has been shown at CinemaCon, which is currently going on right now in Las Vegas. Last night, Tuesday, Disney had a sizzle reel showing not only Star Wars The Last Jedi footage, but also other footage of unreleased Disney films that are upcoming. Apparently, there really wasn't that much, other than there was Rey on a planet that looked a lot like Octu, kind of where she was at the end of The Force Awakens. She had Anakin's blue lightsaber, and she was swinging it at something. And she also was moving rocks using the Force. So, I know, right?
I'm really excited.
So, from description, and that's all that's there, people are saying, oh, it's definitely a darker tone, kind of like Empire Strikes Back. I don't know if that you can get a darker tone from just what was described. Maybe there's something I'm missing, maybe color correction or something, but I honestly feel like maybe it's the moving the rocks and the blue lightsaber. You're like, oh, it's like Empire Strikes Back and Luke on Dagobah and Yoda, but I'm excited at the end. Like, I'm excited.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be more excited once we get a trailer. Like, it's great hearing that she's using a lightsaber, and it's great hearing that she's moving rocks, but also I kind of want to see for myself.
Yeah, well, we knew she was going to be using the lightsaber because the packaging for all the merchandise was released a couple weeks ago, and she's got the blue lightsaber, so we knew that was happening. But, I'm excited to see more, but I do like that Disney's slowly kind of trickling out some of this footage. I'm sure we'll get something from Celebration.
Yeah,
we're going to get a trailer.
Yeah, the trailer is going to drop at Celebration. Like... they wouldn't have held out on it for this long, because it was going to come in one of two places. It was either going to air during the Super Bowl, or it was going to air during Celebration. It's one or the other. Yeah.
Now, my question is, now this is getting to pure speculation, not about the film, but about the release of the trailer. So, what if we don't get a trailer and we get like a sizzle reel like we got at San Diego Comic-Con for Rogue One? Because that came before we got a trailer.
So Celebration Europe, there was a Rogue One sizzle reel, but they also showed a Rogue One trailer.
And they never released
the one
that
didn't get right.
They did not release that trailer, which.
But I don't know. I feel like, I mean, they haven't started promoting the film in mainstream circles yet, and I feel like April for Star Wars is. I mean, it follows obviously the path that they took for Force Awakens, except for the teaser, the Thanksgiving teaser. But I imagine that they'll release at least. I mean, it might not be a trailer. I guess it could be a sizzle or something, although that was a lot of fun to watch. But I feel like they have to give us something to base further material off of. You know, we'd already had a teaser for Rogue One by the time we got that trailer. I mean, that sizzle, right? So, we had some idea of the look and, not plot, but the concept of the film. So yeah, I imagine that we're gonna get it. I feel like people will riot.
I don't know. I think it's if you look back at all the previous films released, with exception of Rogue One, at all the prequels, and also at The Force Awakens. I actually did all the research on these. This is where the teaser trailer came from. Was from the prequels. Like they were released. The teaser trailers were released almost a year in advance for the next Star Wars film. And same thing with, The Force Awakens. It was released Thanksgiving the year before. So we haven't had that with Rogue One, and it doesn't look like we're obviously getting that because we still don't have a trailer now for, episode 8.
I think because what they're doing is staggering the promotion. I mean, they don't want to overlap promotion for the next Star Wars film until they've completely wrapped up with the previous one, which in this case is Rogue One. Now that the DVD and Blu-ray releases and digital releases is coming up or has happened
Digital release is out, but physical release is not there yet. It'll be out the 4th of April, so.
Yeah, so before Celebration. So I guess they're waiting for that to happen so that they can get all of the push for buying Rogue One out of the way, and then they're free to focus all of their marketing on The Last Jedi rather than trying to muddle the two.
Yeah.
Which is vaguely what they did with Rogue One. We didn't start properly seeing Rogue One stuff until Force Awakens had completely wrapped up all of it, including the DVD release, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly that. So we had seen the DVD release, and then we were slowly waiting for Rogue One stuff to come, and it came.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like for at least the saga films, I feel like they should be promoting them more because, it's the consistent story. And with these other films in between, I feel like people did get confused. Even my mom, who I love dearly, and she's seen all the Star Wars films, she got kind of confused with Rogue One. She was like, wait, why is Darth Vader in it? Like, she didn't understand the timeline placement until I literally drew out here's episode 1, episode 2, and I even put little notes of what happened in the film so she remembered it. I'm like, this is where Rogue One goes. Like, she's like, oh, so Rey's not in it. I'm like, no. This is the title crawl. I love you, Mom. I know you're going to listen to the episode, but I love you. But seriously, it was like, no, this is the title crawl of, the film you saw in 1977.
Not gonna lie, Mama Bushiro, I kind of feel the same. Wait, Rey's not in this one?
Then why am I here?
So
more Rey. That,
yes. So, but we had Jin in Rogue One, so yeah. I don't know. I feel like there should be more. I was really hoping there'd be a Last Jedi trailer at the end of Rogue One or something like that, in theater. Just to super hype it up. And another reason to go see Rogue One multiple times was to see the Last Jedi trailer, too.
Yeah.
Oh, Mikey. Or even, I mean, I didn't really expect a trailer. I thought maybe they would do a little quick shot, like similar to what they released when they were like, we're filming, But yeah, no, they didn't. And it's fine. It's okay. I just want one now. I need Rey back in my life.
Moving on from the Last Jedi footage, that was Rey holding a lightsaber and moving rocks.
That's super exciting.
It is super exciting, but like, it's honestly, it's something that like we all expected. Like, the next we're gonna hear is like Rey actually riding Luke Skywalker, and, you know, or Luke Skywalker riding Rey. come on, like Yoda was on Luke's back. What are you guys thinking?
You need to contextualize that sentence, Mikey.
Okay. Yes.
Like, you guys are like, wow, your minds go really gutter quick. But
this,
like Yoda,
this isn't the After Dark episode, Mikey.
Like Yoda being a backpack on Luke, unless we see Rey carrying Luke around like a backpack. Jeez. This is exactly what I would expect if he's training her, you know? So that, there we go. Probably right before he tells her that, you know, she's his daughter. Anyway, moving on. Moving on. We saw our first bit emerge from The Last Jedi. It's made its way online, which I think is absolutely amazing. This merch has been made to coincide with the Star Wars Force for Change Fund for UNICEF. These items will debut at booth 3463 at Star Wars Celebration. They'll be exclusive to the Disney parks, at the actual parks, and at Star Wars Celebration. I will say the Rebel button, the Resistance button, is freaking awesome, I think. I kind of want that. And then the t-shirts just look awesome. What do you guys think about this? You know, there's three t-shirts, a BB-8, a Rey, and then the trio and BB-8. What do you guys think of this this new merch?
I am completely obsessed with the artwork. I love it. Like, so much. I think they're great. I love Rey's kind of hairstyle look and the, like, lightsaber. But that pin. I want that pin so badly. So badly. It's so cool.
It really is. I will say, I think the pencil
art. I love the sketched artwork.
Yeah, the pencil art is just amazing. Like,
I think that's the same artist that's done the badge artwork, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, those are gorgeous. Oh,
God. For the badges for Star Wars Celebration? I'm pretty sure it's exactly the same artist, or at least it looks the same. If you've seen them, have you seen them, Mikey?
Yes, I have. We talked about them on the show like a month ago. The badges, yes, when they were announced and the artwork, when they had chosen the artwork and released it. But yeah, but I will say the t-shirt, like, I think the one I really want would be the four of them on it. You know, Poe, Finn, Rey, BB-8. It has the little shoulder thing of the Resistance, kind of like a spray paint. I like it a lot. But these items will be found at the Disney parks at Walt Disney World Resort at both Disney's Hollywood Studio, Disney Springs, and the Magic Kingdom. And then at Disneyland and at Disneyland Park at the Star Trader, Star Wars Launch Bay, of course. So definitely check those out if you are going to be visiting one of those places soon.
Yeah, I do want to. I do want one of those t-shirts.
Am I crazy, or does Rey's costume look different?
I think it is slightly, yeah.
You know, it is different. You know, when she changed her hair, she decided to pull out from her little satchel, you know, a change of outfit. You know, there you go.
I think it looks, so from here, it looks like it's cinched in on the waist by a sash of some kind rather than those belts. And also on the arms, it's not the ribbed waist coat jacket thing that she had when she left with the arm warmers. So she's got wraps around her arm instead, and the shaping across the front is more in line with the traditional, like, Jedi robe look underneath, like the way that it would look underneath the Jedi robe. So it looks more traditional Jedi garb than her actual standard outfit. I don't know if that's like artistic interpretation or whether that's actually the outfit she's going to be wearing in The Last Jedi.
I'm trying to find the art.
It's similar to the art from the packaging.
If you
Google that real quick, you can see it, but it's similar to it. So her outfit changes, which is interesting because it's closer to her scavenger outfit than the kind of jacket vest one that she had at the end of The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So, but she's also, she had, I mean, I feel like it's darker, which to me raises some.
Yeah, but it might just be a, you know, a pen, you know, pencil shading thing. You can't have the very, you know, the various colors there.
Yeah.
You know, like if you look at, you know, Poe, his outfit is very dark, you know, but again, that's also, you know, his outfit's supposed to be orange. And when you try to do it, you know, pencil, you know, that's shading and it makes it look darker.
Mostly, I'm just like super stoked that the jacket has apparently survived Kylo Ren's lightsaber. Like, I'm still completely delighted by the fact that it's still fine.
Yeah. All right, Dunya, I know you have some bit of news talking about merchandise, not necessarily Last Jedi.
Yes.
Merchandise.
Yeah, so if you like pins, or you're like me and you collect pins, or you're a Disney pin trader or anything like that, and you are liking the mixture of, like, the idea of resisting the current, I guess the current political climate and mixing it in with your Star Wars sort of stuff, someone has created these really awesome pins. I think it's Capricanus Bathco. So basically, you've got different pins in, like, with the Rebel symbol, the Rebel Alliance symbol in the middle, but the wings on the outside are the different flags for asexuality, bisexual. They've got the gay flag, and then they've got transgender flag as well. So we'll put a link to these in the show notes, but they're really cool. They're about $10 each, and I absolutely love them. They've got a little bit that says resist underneath, and I bought the bisexual flag resist pin, and I've been taking to wearing it on my, I've got a bag that I carry everywhere with me. And
also have the, what do you call it, the rainbow resist as a sticker too.
Oh, have they got a sticker now as well?
Yeah, they have two die-cut stickers. One is just the Rebel logo with rainbow. Kind of reminiscent of the old Apple logo, though. I don't know if I just like the Rebel logo with the colors. But then there's the same resist, you know, the Rebel logo with the rainbow kind of wings on it. It says resist underneath.
Yeah, I absolutely love them. I'm obsessed with these. I think they're so cool. Because I've got, you know, the one I'm carrying on this right now, so my one hasn't arrived yet, but the one I've got on my bag that I put all my pins on, the one I've got right now is the Join the Resistance one from the Disney parks. But these are all on pre-order. So, yeah, if you're within the US, I think it's like $4 to ship, roughly. But then if you're international, so if you're outside of the US, expect to pay about 10 for shipping. But all profits from the sale of all of these pins also go to the ACLU. So it's for a good cause. It's for a very good cause.
If you really just want to join the resistance type pin, we do sell our own pins.
Oh, Mikey, don't take away from a good cause for now.
I'm not saying taking away from it. I'm just saying we do sell our own buttons, and one of them is the same logo as Join the Resistance.
Yes, but, so yeah. Mikey's doing what's called a shameless plug for our own merchandise there.
I'm sorry. All right, whatever. I may just have those in my car. Not all of them, but like mine. Anyway, let's move on.
Sorry.
Someone's phone is ringing. Let's move on. So, John Knoll. The phone's ringing. Hello? Anyway, John Knoll, for those of you who don't know, he is a longtime employee of Industrial Light and Magic. He is also the producer and the guy who came up with the idea, or at least the pitch, for Rogue One. And he has another idea, but it may be kind of out there. There is a quote from him saying, "I do have one more idea that I may or may not pitch. I've got it about 3/4 figured out if I can solve the last portion of it. I'll see if Kathy's interested. She may throw me out of her office, though." So, and here, for those of you guys who don't know John Knoll, like, we had Jay on the show, and he works with John. And John Knoll was longtime visual effects guy. You know, he created Knoll Light Factory. You know, like the J.J. Abrams and the lens flare. John Knoll's the guy who kind of created that.
Oh, so that's who we have to
thank for that.
Yeah, if you just do a quick goal, you know, K-N-O-L-L, Noel Light Factory. It's been around for years. We have someone listening to us in the recording studio right now. Yes, John Noel is the person to blame for the light flare, but he's also done some really great visual effects stuff. Obviously, he works at ILM, and he also came up with Rogue One, which I love. But he is working on something new, and I would love to see what he has to work on, just because I feel like he's going to have like this really interesting take. Just like Rogue One was kind of not your typical saga film, and it was such a good story for them to start off their kind of standalone for. I feel like if he has something, even though I hope he can figure the last portion out, because I feel like it'll be really out there, but it'll be really good.
I kind of want something like completely different that we're not expecting.
I want a Star Wars musical. I'm just saying, a musical would be amazing.
We've technically had a nod to musicals in Rebels, so, you know.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. But, you know, like a full-on, like, live-action musical, you know.
But what I mean is, like, something a little different, a little unexpected. Like, I don't know, looking at the idea of the Handmaidens from Naboo and stuff like that. Like, I think that would be really, really cool.
Do not talk about the musical number from B. Arthur in the Holiday Special. The Holiday Special does not exist in Star Wars.
I mean...
And we also had a musical number from, you know, the Star Wars show also for the Holiday Special. But, like, honestly, could you imagine, like, a Star Wars musical a la, like, Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog? Even bringing in, like, Nathan Fillion, you know, coming in and being, like, a smuggler-type character... Like, you know...
No! We've got one Han Solo-esque character already. We don't need multiple ones.
Right, forget Han Solo, but, like, what about having Lando Calrissian do it? Come on, they did it in, what was it, when he played Troy in, what was the show? Community. Like, they did a musical episode. Danny Glover can sing. I would love to see Lando, like, be, like, in the casino type thing, like... You know, here at Cloud City. I don't know, but...
I mean...
You guys can get the visual. It's just like kicking the... Like, come on, it's Lando. He wears a cape.
I strongly suspect this will never happen.
I know. But, I don't know what's giving me that feeling,
right?
Michal.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Well, you know what? You're right. Kathy may throw John Noel and myself out of her office if I ever pitch something like that.
I would really like to be in the position to be thrown out of... Kathleen Kennedy's office.
Right? How did you get in here?
I have this amazing idea about a Star Wars musical. Can you imagine Lando Calrissian on the Cloud City can-canning? Oh, okay. No? Yeah?
Security! Get Death this man out of my office! How did he get in here?
All right. Last bit of news that we have this week is it is official. Mark Hamill will be at Star Wars Celebration. So he is going to be at Star Wars Celebration Orlando. Make sure you... they haven't announced where he's going to be, though, if he's just going to be signing autographs.
He's just going to be there. Hanging out.
But that would be Mark Hamill. Like, Mark Hamill would just walk around, like... He would probably put on a costume or something like that and just walk around and, you know, be there. But, you know, but he's going to be there somewhere. So we'll see as more information is released if he's going to be part of a panel or he's going to be signing autographs or he's going to be at a booth or something.
I mean, it's almost certain that they will give him a panel. In fact, his panel at Star Wars Celebration Europe was, like, my favorite of the weekend other than the Rebels panel. But... Yeah, so he was excellent. But he was also, he also signed autographs and took photos and everything as well. So if that's your thing, expect that he'll be doing that.
For a lot of money.
It is for a lot of money. Like, it's an obscene amount of money. Personally, I think that, but for other people, that sort of thing can be priceless to them, so.
Totally true.
Yeah. For me, less so. But as much as I love Mark Hamill,
Have they announced? Are Daisy and John going to be there? Or
have not announced that.
No. I know that Felicity Jones is going to be there.
Yeah, a bunch of the people from Rogue One will be there.
Mm.
But we haven't... And that's where, you know, it's interesting. I can see why they're moving Celebrations to not be every year. So we'll see how the people still working would...
Sarah Michelle Gellar is going to be there.
Yeah,
oh, right. She was...
sister.
And Freddie Prinze.
They're married, and he's Kanan, so... Yeah. All right.
Thanks for that, Captain Obvious.
Wait, they're married?
What? Okay, anyway.
He's Kanan?
Oh my gosh. All right, let's just skip right over listener feedback and move straight to our spotlight topic here.
We are not skipping listener feedback. Listener feedback is important, Mikey.
Not when they disagree with me.
So, Mikey's trying to alter the narrative. No, so we got some listener feedback from Joe Ritchie, who is addressing comments that I made about Woody Harrelson's assertions that the Han Solo film is going to be the best Star Wars film ever, and I basically was just saying no over and over again. Very bluntly. But Joe says, Mikey, I completely agree with Donya. There is no way the Han Solo film would be the best. Episode 6 was the best.
Now, in my defense, Donya, you know I like to play both sides here and argue with it.
Yeah, I will agree. But also at the same time, Mikey, no.
I mean, it's not going to be the best movie. So...
You know what? I don't want it to be the best movie, but I want it to be just so all you guys who are like, no, hating on Han Solo film will be no. I will say there were a few things that we kind of skimmed over last week that as I read further into it, it kind of worries me.
You're worried?
Well, did you guys see that Bob Iger said we're going to learn about how Han Solo gets his name?
Yeah, but
named the dog Han Solo.
Now my question is, does he have a different name and then he picks the name Han Solo like a superhero?
Oh my god,
name?
He would. It's a genetic thing. Oh my god, Ben Solo changed his name to Kylo Ren because Han Solo chose his name.
I interpreted that as him saying how he made his name, like how
that's
he
what
became.
I interpreted too. But people have pulled it up and said the other ways, and I'm just like, I really hope that's
I just
not
think
true.
It'll be hysterical.
Oh boy! All right,
it's hereditary. Choosing just throwing away your former name and choosing a new one. He got it from his father, clearly. Oh my god, he'd hate that. Kylo Ren would hate that so much. Don't say I got it from my father.
It's too much Vader in him. Anyway, let's move into the spotlight topic, which is Rebels Season 3 and the finale episode, which was a two-parter, 0 Hour. Mm-hmm. First of all, quick recap. This is the first time the Rebels truly... I feel like they really lost at the end. And that was the end of it. Like, that was the end of the season. Like, they made it away, but they suffered pretty heavy losses at the hand of Thrawn. And it was clearly a defeat. It wasn't like they didn't... You know, they were planning to free Lothal, and guess what? They couldn't do that, because they just got demolished. What do you guys think about this episode, this finale episode?
I really, really, I couldn't look away through the whole thing. I was really just impressed with it as a finale, because like you said, we've never really hit a point where there's been such hugely devastating loss before. Like, yeah, they got away, but literally by the skin of their teeth. And the reason that they got away from, the reason that they managed to escape was purely down to the fact that Constantine didn't listen to Thrawn. That is the only reason, that's the only reason that they managed to get away, because that set into effect, like, everything a chain else. Of events. Like, yeah, it just kind of, like, spiraled into, like, them being able to get to Sabine and get reinforcements and get the word out there and bring people back. I mean, they still were pretty handily defeated. They lost a lot of people, including General Sato, which I'm so sad about. Like, that still is really upsetting to me. Like, but it really built up to, like, it was a really satisfying conclusion to me, because Thrawn has been building up to this moment, and you see everything fall into place. Like, the way that he's been learning about them, their patterns of behavior, their personalities, like, how that affects their strategy, what they're most likely to deviate from, where he should expect them to do something unexpected. Like, the reason why he's been letting them go the whole time is so that he could basically give a more devastating blow, rather than, like, picking off smaller cells of rebels whenever, like, they sort of popped up. This way he managed to basically get them all in one place and know with certainty that he could, essentially, he could have wiped them all out in one go.
Mm-hmm.
If Constantine had stuck to the plan, he would have wiped them all out.
Well, and that's what we were saying, is Constantine decided to be greedy.
yeah,
Constantine decided to be greedy. It literally put everything into a chain of events of Ezra being a sneak by. I will say, when he called Mon Mothma calling for reinforcements, I was actually really disappointed. I understand her position, but we had just seen, you know, in a couple episodes previously, the entire rebel fleet that we saw kind of at Scarif gather together. You know, when she made her, you know, when she had her call, and they were at Dantooine, and she's like, "We can't do it." And I'm like, "Okay, it makes sense." Like, the big first rebel battle was at Scarif in Rogue One, so this is kind of like little skirmishes they're doing. But I'm glad that I was like, he has to go to Sabine. Like, I was just, like, super excited for him to be able to go. I was excited to see that they didn't have a lot of ships. They did exactly what the Mandalorians would have done. They did the spacewalking thing to take out the other interdictor cruiser. But, Mikkel, what'd you think of that zero-hour, two-parter episode?
I liked it. I mean, it definitely... Well, it ended on a slightly higher note than I, you know, kind of thought that they would, given that most of the rebel fleet that we're acquainted with got totally slaughtered. You know, I think one of my big complaints would be the fact that, like, we don't really get to see that impact. And I mean, to be fair, this is a kind of a Star Wars wide issue, but, like, you know, Ezra and Zeb and Hera and they're all watching, like, their ships full of people they know be blown up in space. And they're like, "Oh, let's crack a joke." And I'm like, I mean, maybe I'm, like, too emotional for war, and that's just why I react that way. But, yeah, I mean, the reason that kind of bugs me is because I think that Rebels very rarely goes as far as I want it to, and even when it does, it kind of hedges a little bit, you know? So, like, I think this was a great episode, I really do, and it was maybe one of the first times that I was genuinely, like, impressed by Thrawn. I thought his final confrontation with the Bendu was fantastic. A highlight of the series, I think. But there's still, I don't know, there's still some kind of hesitation that, like, you know, none of the main crew even got hurt. Everybody was okay. Even Rex is okay. Rex is still fine.
I honestly didn't think
Rex makes it to the end of Endor.
Yeah.
Rex is there to defeat the second Death Star, so we know that.
So, like, saith Filoni.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually legitimately thought that we were going to lose someone. And at one point, like, Was your heart in your throat when Callus managed to jettison the escape pod and then was literally floating there and he got off the, like, signal to be like, hey, I managed to escape. Please come get me. Like, I was there kind of thinking, oh god, that he's gonna get caught in the crossfire. Like, something's gonna happen and they're literally just gonna blow him out of the air. And he didn't. He managed to, like, he survived, which I was genuinely not expecting.
Well, yeah, okay, so I will say that unfortunately I saw some screen caps on Twitter of the episode, like, because I just watched it now. But yes, I will say I think that what they've done with Callus is really, really wonderful. And I'm actually confused because, I mean, if you had asked me what I was most certain of going into this season, I was like, oh, well, Callus is going to die, obviously. Like, that's not even I'm not betting. I'm just telling you something that is clearly going to happen. So, I mean, I guess I kind of give it, I mean, right. So I'm torn between, like, being upset that they didn't pull the trigger and also, like, okay, well, they clearly went in a different direction with this because it was quite, you know,
but
easy to predict.
Using Obi-Wan logic from a certain point of view, they did kill off Callus. They changed his character and he moved to the rebels.
There's no need for that, Mikey.
From a certain point of view. Anyway.
No, Mikey.
I will say, though, it's interesting you're talking about Callus. It was Callus who actually gave away the rebels' base. Because when he decided to make his call through Fulcrum, that really nice, was it deduction of the multiple places intersecting when he was traveling, Thrawn was able to deduce where the base was, which I thought was, it was pretty smart, but I kind of wondered why they hadn't done that before, you know, when he knew there was a spy on board somewhere.
I mean, the other thing is that because they legit, well, he through Imperial Eyes removed a planet from the ones that Thrawn had narrowed it down to, like, that is through Imperial Eyes.
Yeah, but even then, like, do you think that the rebels have to be on a planet? Couldn't they just be floating off in the middle of space? And if all he did was triangulate from two, you know, point of origins and the direction they're going, like, they should have, and he knew there was a spy among them for a longer time, like, couldn't he have done that before, even if there was no planet? Like, I don't know. Like, maybe that's just me thinking, like, okay, you have two points, and this is how they intersect, and that's where it's at.
Yeah.
We've had this for a while.
I mean,
like, they had to wait for, like, it to be the finale for them to go to, you know, Atalon and stuff like that. But still, I was kind of like,
and it also depends on how many messages that he's sent between through Imperial Eyes and the finale, because that setback of information happened in through Imperial Eyes, but we don't know how many messages he sent as Fulcrum between then and the finale. We only know with certainty that he tried sending a message off in the finale. I can't remember if they reference getting anything prior to that. Since through Imperial Eyes?
Maybe. But, so overall, I think we all agree that Zero Hour two-parter was a phenomenal episode, and a really good episode to end the show on, or the season on, not the end of the show. We'll have season 4 coming, I don't know when, probably in the fall.
I have to say, like, there has been an extremely noticeable and very disappointing lack of Hera and Kanan interaction. Like, they, like, looked at each other in this episode, and I was like, oh, right! Huh, I love it when they interact! I love them! You know? And then, like, I was just like, I really missed that part of the show, and I wish they would, like, develop bickering. It more.
Oh my god, they're bickering when Kanan went off to go and see the Bend.
Yeah. And when he, like, said that he was alive and whatever, and she's like, that is only funny because you are not dead. Yeah. And she called him love, and I'm the biggest shipper of them, but the show gives us so little, like, not even like little glances most of the time. Like, a lot of the time it's really like they're not even in a relationship, and then sometimes they just are in a relationship.
So I started rewatching it. Okay, so I started rewatching Rebels from season one because I got bored, and sometimes I'll start rewatching things from the start, like when I get a little bit bored. And I thought, oh, you know what? Now the Rebels is wrapped up for the season, I wonder what it would look like if I just watched everything all in one go. Will, like, certain character arcs stand out more for me? Especially now with, like, other things in the Star Wars universe having come out, like, you know, Rogue One. Like, are there things that are gonna, like, mean different things now that I've watched it? It is so obvious that Hera and Kanan are, like...
Well, have you guys read...
I was going to say doing it on the regular. I probably shouldn't be saying that, but well, they totally are.
It's obvious from the first book that they're in, A New Dawn. Did either of you guys read that?
I've tried to read it.
Okay. Well, A New Dawn is the introduction of Hera and Kanan when Kanan goes by a different name. And it's obvious that they start a relationship in that novel, and it's carried over. But that novel also introduces Rae Sloane, who we talked about in the Aftermath series. So if you haven't read it, or you want to do another shameless plug, listen to it. You can use audibletrial.com/resistanceradio and download A New Dawn. It's actually really, really good because it is focusing on Kanan and Hera specifically, like those two characters and how they meet and how Kanan gets pulled into the rebellion. But you know, when you're talking about the relationship, like, I think it's meant to take a back seat because it is a show for children.
Oh, no, I mean, I don't mean that this will be, like, a front and center thing. I really don't. I just want more of the little stuff that they do, which I felt like was very much lacking in this season.
Yeah, I guess this season was kind of lacking. This season, and that's what I want to get to, like, this season was an interesting season. This season really heavily focused on Ezra and kind of, you know, his connection to the dark side and light side. That's where we got introduced to the Bendu. We saw Maul. We saw both holocrons. We saw them merge together. We saw Obi-Wan Kenobi. There was a lot that was focused on the Force and kind of light side, dark side, and Ezra being at the middle of it in season three. What do you guys think of season three as a whole?
I mean, I enjoyed it on the whole. I think there were some really great episodes, personally. I really feel like they could have done with focusing more on a single villain, almost. Like, I feel as though they could have used Thrawn more than they did. Not to say that they can't use him more in season four, because basically the way that they've set it up is that, well, you know, he survived, he's going through, and he's probably going to be taking this a hell of a lot more personally than he did before. So, he has room to expand into a bigger role next season, but at the same time, I feel like there was a slight disconnect from that. Especially because Thrawn was so hyped up from, like, Star Wars Celebration onwards.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I'll admit I got quite frustrated when, you know, the third or fourth time that he was like, it is okay, I have a bigger plan. I shall not take out this annoying cell of rebels that keeps bothering me right now. You know, I'm like, yes, I get that he has a bigger plan, but, like, it just stopped working for me. And I almost wonder if, like, they would have been better off saving him for the end of the season, because I do think he's pretty strong in the latter half, you know, the stuff with Kallus and whatever, but I feel like it might have been more impressive if he had come in, if they had called him in, if they had really been like, we're trying to keep this under control, blah, 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 price, you know, we can't figure it out, or maybe take the focus off of the Imperials for the first half of the season. I don't know. I don't write the show, but like, if it had been like, we really need to call in the big guns, like, he is our last option before we, you know, have to go to the Emperor in defeat and be like, these weird rebels in this one ship keep destroying all of our plans and it's sad. You know, I feel like it would have been better if
he came in as like a fixer.
Well, if he'd really been like the dagger to, like, to you know, the final stroke, as opposed to, like, he does kind of run around after them for most of the season, like, waving a sword, theoretically, and being like, come here, let me kill you! And then going like, never mind, I won't kill you now! Like, I don't know.
And that's, I'll agree with you 100% on that. Like, I feel like they introduced Thrawn at the beginning of the season because it was Thrawn. Like, that was, like, the big thing. Oh, Thrawn is joining us. But at the same time, like, I almost wonder if, like you said, had released it, you know, the back half. You know, this season had a lot of character growth for characters like Wedge and AP5 and Ezra. You see who I put there first on you?
I liked it.
You like the Wedge episode, right?
Yeah, I did.
Thank you. You like Wedge. All right, we out number
one. I also love AP5, so.
Yeah, but like, but
yeah,
the fact that
I loved,
like,
AP5 sass of being like, "Who are you? What are you doing here? Like, shut up."
But that's my point. Like, the fact that, you know, we had character growth with these type of characters. We saw Mon Mothma who trickled in. We saw a character, you know, kind of growth of the rebellion. You can't really say the rebellion is a character, but like as a, you know, story arc and plot point. You know, so we saw all these things kind of grow, and I get that Thrawn is meant to be, you know, this, again, it's hard because canon Thrawn versus what we know in the novels of Thrawn, like, there's a disconnect. So, you know, I understand, like, he was doing what he's doing, letting him go, but he did let the rebels go quite a bit throughout the entire season, and it was frustrating, like, especially, like, even on the second one where he essentially caught, like, it was the second or third episode where that he had caught, Hera and Ezra, you know, on Ryloth?
Yeah,
it was on Ryloth, and when they were going after her Kalakori, and it was one of those things where it's like, hey, he already captured them. He kind of let them go, even though he didn't have to let them go that early on. Like, he had zero reason not to let them go. He's like, they won this one, let them go. Like, he really didn't have to let them go.
I feel like it was, like, some story structure problems. Like, I feel like what could have been more interesting would be building up to Thrawn being introduced in, like, the mid-season finale kind of bit, and then using the back half of the season to really just escalate Thrawn, like, trying to figure out who the rebel spy is, alongside trying to figure out how these rebels operate in order to then launch the attack that we see in the finale. I feel like they split their time too much between everything, and instead of having it as like a neat, streamlined story building into each other, we were kind of like pinballing between like plot points and antagonists and forces that they're working against, and it didn't,
an awkward, like, Rogue One tie-in that ultimately didn't tell us anything really about Rogue One or Rebels.
Individually, I loved every single episode. Like, isolated, all of the episodes worked really well as single episodes. Like, there wasn't necessarily anything that I inherently disliked about the individual episodes. I'd love to watch season 3 again, like, all the way through start to finish, which I will do. I'm over halfway through rewatching season 1 right now, so I'll get there, but also it'll just be interesting to watch it as a whole, because it feels to me, sitting at the end, so where we are right now, it was fairly disconnected, but I still enjoyed it, which is the odd part. I didn't dislike it, I just feel like it could have been
streamlined. I think it was a good season for Star Wars Rebels. I think it's better than season 1 by far, and a lot of is better than season 2. I just think that I find myself getting increasingly frustrated in terms of, like, the all sizzle, no steak ness that I sometimes feel like the show is. And I don't know. I mean, I recognize that it's a kid show, you know, but so was Avatar. Yeah. And,
well,
you know.
you bring it up all sizzle, no steak. You know, it also brings up like one of the most important parts of season three, at least in my eyes, was the Darksaber and Sabine Wren going back to Mandalore and leaving the crew of the Ghost, which is definitely kind of, you know, a little bit more substance there that she left. And it was nice that they came back at the end in the episode, you know, 0 Hour, to be the ones who help the team. And actually, if you guys got a chance to see the I guess it's like early production artwork for season four, it definitely has to deal a lot with the Mandalorians. But what do you guys think about the Darksaber? Because it did, that episode specifically, when we talked about the Darksaber, it was one of those things where it introduced a lot of old EU stuff back into canon. One, Darksabers in general, which we saw in like Star Wars The Old Republic and Revan storylines. We learned about the Jedi Mandalorian War, which is directly tied to Darth Revan and Malak and stuff like that. So what do you guys think about the Darksaber storyline?
See, I thought it was interesting being able to reintroduce all of that lore again, but also, I don't know if you picked up on it, but it obviously does have implications, because where we pick up with Sabine in the finale from that episode is we learn the fact that there is essentially a Mandalorian civil war happening right now, based entirely on the fact of, like, everything that happened in that episode where Sabine mm-hmm. returned with the Darksaber. So I feel like even though we didn't see it happening because our focus was on the crew of the Ghost who was still on the Ghost, that was all simmering in the background. And I think it was very purposeful that they set that up in the finale, because I feel like that is going to be the launching point for season four, is what happens next with the Darksaber, what happens next when the Mandalorians are essentially going to war. So I think that's going to be a central part of season four. So I think personally, the way that they introduced that was quite clever, because it linked it back into Maul's story, but also propelled it forward into Sabine hopefully having a more central, like, story through season four. So I quite liked it, the way that it was done. And I think it's really interesting to see her in this, like, really weird middle ground place where she understands the role of the Darksaber. She understands its lore, she understands its status in having it, but she also doesn't want to be the person to wield it, but she will for as long as she has to, until it can go to the right person. Like, I think that's a really interesting character thing to explore. So there's a lot of interesting stuff still to be mined from that storyline.
I agree with you that I almost feel like this might be the beginning of the story arc of the next Star Wars TV show that we know that they're working on. Because, one, we have a couple Mandalorian characters who are very notable.
They've said, though, that's in very, very, very early talks. So if it is, it will be... I mean... animation, the initial parts of animation, you know this, it can take years to get off the ground, just to get to the point where you've got the first season. Subsequent seasons can usually come about faster once you've got stuff like character models already built and rigged and able to animate, and all of your assets and stuff built as well, and you've got everything in place. But I feel like this is a more immediate story to be told, rather than something that can sit and simmer for a few years.
Yeah, well, the only reason I bring that up is because I wonder if this storyline will tie into anything we know about Boba Fett. Because he's obviously around at this time, he's a bounty hunter, he is Mandalorian. And that was something that...
True.
It was very obvious through it. What side is he on? You know, because right now we know Boba Fett works with the Empire, at least during the time of the original trilogy, which we're not quite there yet. He's a bounty hunter. He's for hire. He'll work with whoever pays him more. But is he with House Wren? Is he with House, you know, Saxon? You know, where does his allegiance lie?
I mean, I would probably say it's going to be with houses that are allied to the Empire, considering who he's working for in the original trilogy.
But he's only working for him because he's a bounty hunter. He's a free agent.
Yeah, well, but then you see the other Mandalorians, like Sabine, who would never... Like, she's technically, she will work with people, but she's very... She's got a very strict moral code. So, yeah,
and that's where the problem with Boba Fett comes, because we don't have a lot of canon with the new canon. Like, you have the old legacy stuff with Boba Fett, and that's why I'm really excited to see where the whole Mandalorian thing can go with season 4 of Rebels.
I mean,
because it can bring in that character.
I think you might be onto something there, just because they have kind of come into this pattern of pulling their antagonists or their major players or their like big episode players from the movies. And I don't know. I mean, I guess we will have, you know, The Last Jedi that they can tie into in the second half of the season probably, but like, I don't know how far that's going to go since it's like 50 years in the future. But I think that
30,
is it 30 from, yeah, oh yeah, you're 30. Right. 30 years. But I
unless
can't.
You got 90-year-old Luke Skywalker, you know.
I mean, look, he could be 90. I don't know. But I don't think that I don't know who else they would do. I mean, like, unless they.
Well, the reason I bring it up is because, you know, we talked about other characters they brought in. You know, they tied into Rogue One that you mentioned, Mikhail. Like, they brought in Saw Gerrera. We saw Saw Gerrera from, obviously, Rogue One. He was also in Clone Wars. We had Boba Fett join up with Cad Bane and other characters who I would love to see in Rebels. You know, maybe they stumble across, the Empire puts a bounty on their head and they do go after them. But Sabine and Boba Fett have some previous history because, you know, Boba Fett was taken under his, you know, was raised by her mom or something like that at some point in time. You know, who the heck knows? And I agree, like, they do love to pull those types of characters in because they are fan favorites. Like Thrawn, they brought him back because he is a fan favorite and he is a great plot device for the series. So
I mean, I don't know who else, like Mara Jade maybe, but
never bring her back. They already said that, which is really sad.
I mean, I doubt that they would actually admit that they would or wouldn't bring her in, but then I feel like even if they did, though, I'm conflicted.
If they did, she would have to be like an Inquisitor, you know, because she was the Emperor's hand, well, that type of thing. And just
yeah,
not
no,
be
no, no, no. I get
Luke.
That. What I mean is that people are gonna assume or expect that she'd be connected to Luke in some way, potentially in the future. And I don't think that that's the way that the current saga films want to go. But that said, it would be interesting to see Mara Jade caught up with Thrawn and the Empire, who isn't inherently connected to Luke, who is living this entirely separate life. Like, I still think I'd be really interested to just see her on her own, because I loved Mara Jade so much. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, looking back, I did think that the Sabine stuff was strong. Obviously, not having seen the Clone Wars, the idea of the Mandalorians and the Darksaber meant very little to me. But that's not the show's fault. That's my fault. But I did think it was emotionally very well done. But okay, so one last thing, though. Remember how we came into this season going like, Ezra's gonna go dark, or like that's gonna be a thing, and the whole premiere was like, which side is Ezra on? And then
yeah,
what happened to that?
Well, he after the holocrons and everything, and he went with Maul and that whole introduction to the Darksaber series, like, he turned back to Kanan, who's like, I'm sorry, I'll trust you. Like, the Bendu helped with it all and everything, and putting his trace, you know, basically, Kanan kind of admitted that he doesn't know if he's good enough to train Ezra, and Ezra understood. And I think he just kind of accepted, like, you're right, I need to watch what I'm doing. It was really short. Like, it wasn't a very good explanation, but...
I feel like, with some shuffling around, that could have been... Like, they could have done the arc in, like, a much better way. For example, introducing this idea of Ezra being quite conflicted between wanting the information from the Holocron and getting his information from there, getting tangled back up with Maul, not really trusting him, but knowing that to get the information that he needs to in order to get to the point where he can figure out how to eliminate the Sith, that Maul is a necessary evil in order to get to that, and teetering between those two points leading up to the mid-season finale being like the culmination of, I guess, the Maul arc. I feel it would have been better to focus on Maul in the first half, and that idea of Ezra teetering between the light and the dark and trying to figure that out, and then using like this big culmination at the midpoint to tip them over into the Thrawn storyline after some stuff from Maul kind of has some huge fallout. Like, I feel like for me, some of the stuff bringing in like the idea of Obi-Wan would have worked really well in a mid-season finale to wrap up the Maul storyline rather than trying to like push everything into the back half. I don't know, I just feel like it could have been structured in a better way to better address it.
Well, I'll agree. Just having the Maul storyline and Obi-Wan kind of end the episode before the season finale, and don't get me wrong, like I loved the Maul Obi-Wan kind of duel.
Yeah.
But it kind of was like, oh, Ezra, you really shouldn't go to Tatooine. It's Maul tricking you. But I have to go. I go, and there's this battle, and that's kind of it. Like, it's like,
why?
We're playing this. I'm like I get it, but it seemed really forced, almost, as a whole.
You know, I don't get it.
Especially since we've seen Maul manipulate him. I know, right? Since
also, I hate Ezra, so that could be stopping me from getting it. I will totally admit, but, like, just, like, I have to do this. Why?
I feel like it would have made more sense in the first half of the season, rather than the point where we got it in the back.
Like,
half.
If he'd been looking for guidance, and I don't know. I guess I'll say, again, I don't mean that this was, like, a terrible, crappy season, because it's not. I think this is about as good as Rebels is. But I think that, I mean, for me, I can't trace a major change in most of the characters except for Sabine. And that's a bummer.
She had the most growth this
and
season.
And Kanan, they undid the whole blind
AP
thing.
AP5.
Oh, yeah, AP5.
You can see now through the Force. AP5 had a great, you know,
oh, my God,
arc.
Kanan drives me great. Like, he can drive a speeder. How can he drive a speeder? No, this is
the
not.
Force,
they should not.
The Force. They the Force.
Well,
they,
yes. What not they should have done. The Force works.
What they should have done
Murdoch,
is have
Matt
his
Murdoch
eyes
is
be
blind too.
Injured. Yeah, okay, but that's not. It's not the same thing, and it's just dumb, and it also annoys me, actually, when, like, it's clear exactly how well Matt can actually see. But, like, come on. I mean, he can deflect blaster bolts. Do blaster bolts have a mark in the Force? I mean, come on. He's
also
no different at all.
Excellent comment here of Matt Murdock can't drive a car, which... Preach.
It's
no,
true.
He cannot drive
as far
a car.
As we know.
Yes, no, but Matt, don't get in a car.
I mean, Danny shouldn't have either,
is,
and yet somehow.
Too. Okay. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I think, I don't know. I feel like the Bendu, like, they had story development. Like, characters did develop and grow. Like, the Bendu probably had a huge, I personally think, had a huge, you know, development throughout the beginning, the end of the season when we were first introduced to him, and then at the very end when he became this crazy storm.
But, like,
we still don't know anything
also,
else about him, and hopefully we learn more, but...
That, to me, not that I don't like the Bendu, because I did, and I thought it was cool what they did with him in the end, but I was sort of like, I didn't get where the whole, like, angry Mufasa in the clouds was coming from. Like, you know, like, why is he so pissed off at Kanan? Like, you're the one in the middle, okay? So, like, I get, like, I don't care. I didn't get from him, I care enough to get really pissed off.
I think it was really funny, because on Rebels Recon, Dave Filoni basically was like, this is a dude that just wants to sleep. That's it. That's all he wants
really,
to do.
That's what it was.
He just wants to nap and sleep and not really worry about anything. And here come all of these guys to basically tear up his planet where he just wanted a nap.
Well, he really should have like dealt with that before he let the rebel base get established on his planet then.
Yeah, you kind of think that eventually
it wasn't difficult
that's
to predict.
It's gonna mean something, surely, if a rebel base is set up on the planet. Yeah. Like,
I mean,
you know, eventually someone's gonna come for those guys when they figure out where they are.
Yeah, and again, I'm not saying it's not cool, because it was cool. It didn't totally connect for me. But, I mean, I did like that kind of they didn't... Although, okay, I both like and was annoyed by... I don't like it when stories do that thing where it's like, let's trigger this mystical thing, and that mystical thing is mad at you for triggering it, and then we just skate away clear and free, which is what Kanan does. Like, it's yelling at him. Bendu is yelling at him. He's like, bye! I didn't really like that. Well... But I did like that they didn't have him really pick a side. Like, he didn't go...
Did anyone else feel like that scene where they were trying to escape the Bendu's lightning, that it was like Aladdin after, you know, Apu had touched the jewel and the whole cave is like coming out and they're running away? I'm like, man, it feels like it's, you know, Aladdin in the carpet. But yeah, that was me. But I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see. I will say overall, I enjoyed all of season 3. The finale was really good. I will say, I feel like the AKA filler episodes in season 3 were better than some of the ones we've had in the past.
I agree.
I think, and what's interesting is it's really funny because if you ever watched Rebel Recon, they kind of talked about the filler, AKA the filler episodes. And again, I'm trying to say, because they're really not filler episodes. They do move the story along, but in a different way. I think really in hindsight, looking back to season 2, the episode of Zeb and Callus stuck on the planet, had a huge impact to kind of what happened in season 3 with Callus becoming Fulcrum and at the very end leaving the Empire completely and being picked up by the crew of the Ghost. So the filler episodes do move the story along, and I think this season they were probably a little bit more standout and better.
It's funny.
Previous seasons,
like Rebels, gets dinged a lot for having filler episodes, and not all of them bother me, but I do kind of reject the idea that, like, just because they had something, like for example, I kind of think that the mid-season premiere was filler, even though it had, what's the face in it? Saw Gerrera.
Saw Gerrera.
Yeah. In my opinion, that was kind of filler. Of course, the shield generator comes back, but, like, I don't think that just because you introduce a plot concept, that makes an episode not filler. Like, for me, the episode of Zeb and Callus is not filler because there's serious character work that goes on in that episode and that is carried forward from there. So that's just my opinion on filler. Like, I think that sometimes it's appropriate to say that stuff is filler. Although whenever anybody's like, I don't care about AP5 and Chopper, I'm like, shut up, because they are the best. And I would watch a show about those two.
I loved that episode so much.
Oh my God. I love them. I really do.
Yeah, and I don't know. I feel like it's one of those things where they're filler episodes. Like, when people say they don't like filler episodes, I think it's, like I said, the Zeb Callus episode, at the time, it was kind of like, it was okay. Like, it was cool to see, like,
how I loved
it. Yeah, no, I loved it. I loved that episode.
Well, you know, in hindsight, like, I love it, but at the time when it first aired, I was kind of like, eh.
Really?
Yeah, no, not
for
me.
Because I loved that episode when it aired. I remember... we were screaming at each other about that episode, I'm pretty sure,
probably,
over Facebook chat. I remember. Yeah. Yeah. Because we do that a lot about Rebels in Facebook chat when we're watching it. Michal and I will, like, scream at each other. What was the one where there was the promo for it?
It was the one where they go to Ryloth the first time and Kanan...
That's the one. Yeah,
is introducing himself to Cham and introduces, like he calls, like Ezra, Sabine, and Zeb. Ezra and
the wrong.
It's so funny. And then the actors are just like, oh no, he's just nervous to meet his hero. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Why are you doing this?
Yeah, but that one I remember, like, I recorded myself reacting to, like, the clip for Michal, and it was basically me just screeching for the whole like 2 minutes or so. But yeah, no, I remember saying to Michal when that episode originally came out, like, how much I loved it. Because the thing is when they get into the really interesting character work, I love those episodes. And I don't necessarily see those as filler either. I'm on Michal's side here that, like, those are really important because it drives the characters forward.
Yeah.
So you can't necessarily call it filler just because... It's like, it was more a bottle episode than it was a filler episode.
Right.
Because it was all, like, isolated in one location with, like, very little.
And I feel like, a good episode like that, like, whatever it was, the Honorable Ones, that kind of episode gives you a hint that it will be important in the future. Merely, I think, just through its content. Like, yeah, we definitely get the ending, and the ending is emotionally earned. But I think strictly through the conversations that Zeb and Callus are having, like, if from there we'd met Callus again and he'd been like, "Mwahahahaha, I am still evil, never mind," you know, like, then it would have been a filler episode. But because we carry forward with the characters, yeah. But I mean, I agree with Donya. I think that ultimately filler is made by character. It is not made by plot. Yeah, or lack of character, not lack of plot.
Well, and that episode, like, it's really interesting. Like, I remember I rewatched Rebels from start to finish a second time because I was going through it with somebody. That specific episode, the first 30 seconds, they talk about, oh, what's being built on Geonosis right now, which is what sends Saw Gerrera to go ahead and take a look at. Go back and look at it, like the moon that Callus and Zeberon is one of the icy moons of Geonosis, which, you know, we saw in Attack of the Clones. We saw, you know, it's where they're building the Death Star originally, and that's what they're kind of saying, hey, what is this? And that's why there's the Imperial. That's why the Imperials are there. That sends them to the moon and kind of to get out of it. So it's like such a small. I think I'm looking at it right now. It's only on screen for less than a minute. And then it's 2 minutes and 30 seconds, and then it switches over to the story of Zeb and, you know, Callus on the icy planet. So, the, you know, when I say filler episode, you're right. It moved the characters along, but it also, if you go back and rewatch everything, you can see it also moves a pretty significant amount of the story along, too. Like, all these little threads do tie together, which is... probably why I love Star Wars so much, because you see that in everything. Like, the movies tie together to the books tie together to the comics tie together to the TV shows. Like, it is all just there. So, I know that's season 2, not season 3, but yeah. Yeah. I pulled it back up because I remembered that was part of that episode, was they were at Geonosis. Anything else about season 3, guys, or the finale, Zero Hour?
Trying to think if there was absolutely anything else I wanted to bring up. I guess, rest in peace, General Sato, you'll be missed.
What happened to his nephew? Where was the Iron Squadron?
Oh god, I hated that episode.
I think you called it a ship full of Ezras at one point.
But, like, yeah. Really early season 1 Ezras as well.
Yeah.
But,
it was also, I mean, it was so self-indulgent. It was like, yeah, they named the characters after Andy and whatever. Andy. And I'm like, yeah, that's very cute, but there's no reason for these people to exist.
Yeah. As far as where they are, As far as where they are right now, I'm not sure, but I wonder how, like, that might affect the character, knowing that Sato is gone.
And Sato gave his life, you know, for the cause. You know, yeah, so, you know, that's, you know, I would love to see those characters come back because of what Sato, who Sato was and what he did and kind of how he went out. Like, I will say that was a very heroic end to him.
Yeah. Very Rogue One.
Which was interesting. Very Rogue One, very Aftermath Empire's End, too. Like,
specifically I haven't read it yet.
okay. Don't. I will say it's interesting because we talked about this on last week's show. If you look at the Aftermath series, Mikhail, every book in the series by the third one has gotten more stars in reviews from ratings. Like, it's really good now.
Oh, yeah? I have it. I was going to read it, and then I was just,
I really
like,
quite enjoy...
Yeah. No, I probably
I really quite enjoyed Empire's End, like, out of all of them. I think it might be my favorite one.
It was my favorite one out of all of them.
Yeah, just that whole scene with Sato, because Thrawn had been saying, like, one of them is gonna do something completely unexpected. Like, you know that when they're cornered like this, like, the people that they are, you know that they're gonna do something that we're not expecting, and what you have to do is not react to it. Don't. Mm-hmm. Let it play out, because if you start reacting to it, you shift.
Like Constantine did.
Yeah, like Constantine did, which is what completely shifted the tide of the battle eventually. Like, it didn't do it immediately, but it did then later on in the finale. But the fact that Sato was the one who did, like, the really unexpected thing. And also, he didn't assume, or he didn't want to take, like, the whole crew with him. He thought he would be the only one there.
Yeah, he was trying to pull Captain Kirk, and then, I mean, original Captain Kirk.
Yeah. But then
Captain Kirk's dad.
Spock and Bones stayed with him.
Nameless, identical, voiced by Steve Bloom.
All right. Okay. Anything else, guys? Anything else about season 3?
I mean, I am looking forward to season 4.
I am
I
as
know.
Well.
Did I mention the artwork for season 4, right?
All did the they release it?
Yes, the Mandalorian helmets at the end of Rebels Recon. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I'm pretty sure that was Fenro's helmet at the center as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Fenro's.
It really, really, really reinforces this idea that we're going to actually see the Mandalorian Civil War, which I think will be quite interesting to see a focus on that. But yeah. It was an interesting piece of artwork that we are probably going to obsess over until Rebels returns.
I bet we'll get a trailer.
We will. Maybe at Celebration 2. Actually, here's the picture. I got it.
Do you think that we'll get a trailer this soon after the season ending?
Maybe not a trailer.
I don't think we will.
I don't know about a full trailer. Or maybe, like, a trailer for, like, ooh, that's dark.
Yeah.
Holy crap!
It is dark. Yeah, that's what I said. Like, it'd be cool to see, like, where would Boba Fett be?
Are there still heads in those?
Yeah, actually, you can see the helmet on the bottom right, the second one over from the bottom right. It's not just a helmet. Like, it's kind of dark. Yeah. It's scored, like it's been chopped off by a lightsaber or a darksaber, if you will. So yeah, so we'll see, you know, we'll see how it goes. So I wouldn't be surprised, because honestly, if it's an animation show, production-wise, if they are going to be released, let's see, Rebels comes back, what, usually summer, right? Or fall? It's summer, then it comes back again?
Well, that's what they did the other two seasons. I don't think they did it for this year.
No, this year it released a lot later. Yeah.
So, you know, if they're working on fall right now, they would have to have at least, at this point, they would have to have probably the first half of the season near finished, if not finished already.
No,
I'll tell you, when I worked on, so the last TV show I worked on before I moved out of LA, we had animation as well as live action. You know, we had to have the first episode in, again, live action. We had to have it into Nickelodeon by June, and it wasn't going to be released till October. So the very first episode that had to be done had to be in for review by the studio in June, and it was being released in October. So like,
I doubt that they've got finished, like completely finished probably, and polished.
That one wasn't completely finished, but it has to be like near finished. So having a trailer is not unheard of, especially when all the animation's done for probably multiple episodes. You can give that to an editor or an assistant editor, and they can throw together a trailer fairly easy. But yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, 20 episodes, I don't know how long Big Rip season was, but I can tell you season 2 of the show I worked on, it was, you know, we had 20 episodes for that season, and it was all wrapped. Like, the last episode was wrapped and in Nickelodeon's hand, like, finished by the time the first episode was airing. So, like, they're a whole season, like... That's how far in advance it usually is.
I would be pleasantly surprised if they had enough to do a full trailer, but I expect that we might see like a very small teaser.
Or we might get a trailer like a sizzle or something. The season premiere, which is usually two episodes.
And that's what I wouldn't be surprised if it's like that. Like I said, those first two episodes or first episode is probably near done. And the fact that they gave us even artwork already, you know, the day of the release of the season, the finale of season 3, tells me that they've already started working on it. And it's not like they've started, like, they're fairly far along with it. Whether it's completely done, you know, the first couple episodes or not, you know, that remains to be seen. I don't know what, you know, Lucasfilm Animation's, you know, workflow and schedule is, but maybe we should ask somebody. But anyway, thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast and side with me, not Danya, or on Facebook at facebook.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. You can join us in our recording studio as I make many mistakes and you can hear Danya and everyone else pick on me in chat. But as always, I'm Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
And I'm Mika.
Thank you all for listening. And may the Force be with you.
And also with you.